Hi, and welcome to the Should Be Known podcast. I'm Clayton Pixon. Yeah, it's a little on the dark side today, because we're going to be talking about this book, The Drama of the Gifted Child, originally titled something like The Prison of Our Childhood by Alice Miller, a very insightful, lucid mind. And she has a theory that I believe is important for us to talk about on our podcast, on our quest to understand depression and self-deception. So the reason is that she has a theory that two things. One is kind of exactly what I'm saying. Depression is caused by us repressing our emotions, which is the same thing I'm saying. And the other thing she says is that the reason we're suppressing or repressing, suppressing is conscious, repressing is not, anyway, the reason we're pushing down our feelings is because in childhood, we were basically kind of abused by our parents, specifically our mother, in a way that she basically didn't let us feel what we needed to feel, which is horrible to her. And I'm not going to say it's not bad, but to her, it's like, you know, our parents are monsters. Our mother is, you'll see. I'll read a little bit. Let's get a taste of what she says. But the first part, I think, is quite in line with what I'm saying. I think I actually probably stole my idea from her, because I was familiar with this book years ago. And she's written many other books and supposedly resonated with lots of people and changed how people thought about therapy. But if that's the case, where is that in anything that we read? I didn't see anything about this, how depression was suppressing of our feelings. Did you, when you read, you know, about the theories of depression? Well, I'm getting a textbook from somebody on psychology. We'll search it, because the internet doesn't seem to have much on it. Maybe I'm not looking right, but okay, let's read some Alice Miller. Again, we'll discover, like my philosophy professor said, from the first page, if we can, whether the author is off base or not. We're not just trying to find faults, we're trying to find good insights too, but anyway, here's what she says. Experience has taught us that we have only one enduring weapon in our struggle against mental illness. Only one enduring weapon. The emotional discovery of the truth about the unique history of our childhood. So, very first sentence, it's not studies of the brain, it's not brain chemicals. She doesn't say one place in here about brain chemicals that I saw. It's not, you know, it's not anything like that. The only enduring one, it's not medication. It's the emotional discovery of the truth about the unique history of our childhood. I'm thinking already, well, how are we going to know the history of our childhood if we can't remember? So, and she has a few examples in here where some of her patients found the truth about their childhood through dreams. And I believe in revelatory dreams. I believe in the Bible. You know, there are several experiences where, you know, God revealed things in dreams. I believe in that stuff. But I'm a little wary of discovering abuse in your infancy through a dream. I'm not saying that abuse doesn't happen in infancy. But how do you know, how can you trust a dream? Yeah. So that's a little weird to me. Okay. I'm not getting very far very fast here. Unique history. Is it possible then to free ourselves altogether from illusions? History demonstrates that they sneak in everywhere, that every life is full of them. Perhaps, isn't that what I'm kind of saying? Perhaps because the truth often seems unbearable to us. And yet the truth is so essential that its loss exacts a heavy toll in the form of grave illness. In order to become whole, we must try in a long process to discover our own personal truth. I would say, well, you need to become in touch with your feelings, but I don't know that you necessarily have to discover your actual history. Anyway, continuing. Discover our own personal truth, a truth that may cause pain before giving us a new sphere of freedom. If we choose instead to content ourselves with intellectual wisdom, quote unquote, we will remain in the sphere of illusion and self-deception. Okay. The damage done to us during our childhood cannot be undone, since we cannot change anything in our past. We can, however, change ourselves. We can repair ourselves and gain our lost integrity by choosing to look more closely at the knowledge that is stored inside our bodies and bringing this knowledge closer to our awareness. Something to this, right? This path, although certainly not easy, is the only route by which we can at last leave behind the cruel, invisible prison of our childhood. And that's, she repeats that theme over and over, how cruel our childhood was to us. We become free by transforming ourselves from unaware victims of the past into responsible individuals in the present who are aware of our past and thus are able to live with it. Okay, let's read some more. Every childhood's traumatic experiences remain hidden and locked in darkness, and the key to our understanding of the life that follows is hidden away with them. Okay, people develop a special sensitivity to unconscious signals manifesting the needs of others, starting with their mother. Okay, and the reason the child does this, if the child must risk losing the mother's love or the love of her substitute in order to feel, then she will repress her emotions. That's what starts it all out. But they will nevertheless stay in her body, in her cells, stored up as information that can be triggered by a later event. Gee. This is the child's voice speaking. What would have happened if I had appeared before you sad, needy, angry, furious? Where would your love have been then? These early feelings, joined with the pain of being unable to understand what is going on, which is part of the earliest period of childhood, are consciously experienced for the first time during therapy. And she is a therapist, was a therapist. She passed away in 2010. Depression and a sense of inner emptiness are the price they must pay for this control, speaking of the control over your feelings, to suppress them, basically. Okay, let's talk about the mechanism of what happens between the mother and the child. If your mother, you're feeling terrible right now, aren't you? But I think let's try not to throw everything out, see the value of this. Okay, I would say, come on, Alice. Don't you think the mother loves the child in the way they need to be loved as well? And this is, I mean, she makes it sound like the mother's just damaging the child and giving nothing. And I guess if you were to ask me, I do think, you know, every parent gives things to their child and handicaps their child, I guess you'd say. And that's part of living in this fallen world and being imperfect and we try the best we can. But I think every mother loves her child. And Alice Miller, a famous quote of hers, says something about how she sees signs of the commandment everywhere to honor her parents, but nowhere does she see signs of a commandment for the parent to respect the child. And so that's an interesting question, and one that deserves thinking about, I think. But you can see she's definitely kind of on the side of the child, and she's kind of an enemy of the parent. It's not hard to see. Okay. The reliability, continuity, and constancy that are so important for the child are therefore missing from this exploitative relationship. What is missing above all is the framework within which the child could experience his feelings and emotions. Instead, he develops something the mother needs. And although that's just one thing the child develops. Anyway, instead he develops something the mother needs, and although this certainly saves his life by securing the mother's or the father's love, quote-unquote, at the time, it may nevertheless prevent him through his life from being himself. So, with all the criticism I'm making, I do think there's something to this, right? That you can learn as an early child or whatever, and throughout your life, not to express your feelings, not to recognize your feelings, and to become kind of separated from yourself. And I think parents do a great service when they help a child recognize their feelings and letting her feel those and not teaching her that they're bad or inappropriate, even if they are anger and sadness and jealousy and whatever else. But instead of teaching her to suppress those emotions, teaching her to deal with them appropriately. If you're angry, you don't hit your brother. You don't use violence, you know. You don't use verbal violence. You don't, call your brother names and say things that are disrespectful to him or to your parent or to whoever. There are appropriate ways to deal with your anger, but you can express it fully and say, I'm angry. You did this to me. That was not fair. That was not right. I don't appreciate that. You know, maybe I'm not saying this in a way a kid would, but I've seen kids express their anger appropriately. They may raise their voices when they do it. Maybe some parents would say, no, you should never raise your voice. What would I say about that? I think probably if you teach somebody never to raise their voice, well, I'm not sure, okay? I don't want to say something I'm not sure about, but I fear that teaching a kid never to raise their voice is asking for trouble, asking for emotional repression in an unhealthy way. All right. We've got like 20 other things to read in this book. We're not going to get to them all, are we? Unless this is going to be an hour-long podcast, which you don't want. I don't want. Let's talk about depression. Okay, that's what we're kind of going at. That's, I feel like, one of the main goals that we have in this podcast is to figure that out. And we can. Don't let anybody tell you we can't. I read some dude write an article that there's going to be no great leaps in the field of mental health or whatever. It's going to, of necessity, be small incremental things, and there's going to be no Einsteins or Newtons or anything like that. Oh, hogwash. You just don't believe that those leaps can be made. You have no basis for that anyway. They probably didn't believe that about astronomy either. Anyway. Yeah, that's hogwash. And we can find this stuff out, and because we can be smart about it, and we can go to the source, right, of all knowledge. That's what you do. Okay, that's what I'm doing. Quite honestly, I've said more prayers about this than anything else I can think of. That's like a random thing. I've prayed to understand the principles of psychology, and I feel like I've been blessed in that way. And you can do the same thing, and other people around the world can do the same thing, and we can come to a greater understanding of these things and make leaps and bounds in this field. Guys, we need to. We're in the dark, this field. We're groping in the dark. It's like the Dark Ages in terms of religion. But that didn't need to stay forever. Somebody just needed to ask in faith, and that's what we need to do. And we can get to the truth, and I believe that God will help us. Okay, talking about depression. Grandiosity is the defense against depression, and depression is the defense against the deep pain over the loss of the self that results from denial. So depression is a defense. That's kind of what I'm saying. It's a self-deception. It's a justification. It's a way to blind yourself to what's true. And what's true is your real feelings that you don't really want to admit that you have. And so you take on this world view where you're not worth anything, and your emotions aren't real. But the cost of that is that you don't get to be in touch with your emotions, and you experience what we call depression. That's what I'm saying. And she's saying basically the same thing. And grandiosity for her is the defense against depression. So it's kind of the other side of the coin. Depression's on one side and grandiosity's on the other, but they're both really just false. Depression is that we're worthless. Grandiosity is that we're, you know, something greater than we really are. It's a false notion of ourself. And the truth is really that we're a regular person that has needs, that you know, is not perfect, but if you ask me, that is infinitely of worth to God and to the universe, I guess you'd say. So you don't need to worry about trying to be better than other people or whatever other, you know, good qualities you have. We all have good qualities. Even if you don't have blaring talents, it's not the right adjective, but even if you don't have talents that are easily visible, that you don't sing and dance and your IQ isn't 200 or whatever, but you're still, that stuff doesn't matter, because you are still unique and special and of infinite worth to God. Okay, am I preaching too much? Okay, severe depression. One is free from it only when self-esteem is based on authenticity of one's own feelings and not the possession of certain qualities. And that's kind of what I just said. I stole it from her. Kind of. We're on the same track. Depression consists, here she says it right here, depression consists of a denial of one's own emotional reactions. There it is. And here's my question. If Alice is right about this, if that's what depression is, why is everybody saying no one knows what depression is? No one knows what causes depression. If her book was so popular, then where'd it go in mainstream psychology? Who's saying this? Who's saying, well, it... And then we've got the Alice Miller theory, which is that depression is a denial of one's own emotional reactions. What happened? This was written in 1979? Where did this go? Where did this theory of depression go? Somebody told me that. And if she's right, then if that accounts for part of it, then, or if she's partly right, say she's 50% right, then the brain part and the brain chemicals part can only account for a certain amount, and the evolutionary explanation of depression, whatever they want to say that is, sorry, I'm pretty skeptical of those, is only going to be a certain amount of the pie, and all that, but they can't all be, I was going to say something more intelligent about that, but I can't remember. Let's see, she reacted to this interference by withdrawing her feelings and becoming depressed because she could not take the risk of a normal reaction, rage perhaps. So here's an interesting concept. If as an adult this person allows herself to face such reminders and work with them, she will be able to feel the old rage, rebel against the way she was treated, and find the repressed need. The depression will then disappear because its defensive function is no longer needed. So she says, and this isn't the only place, that as an adult going through therapy or whatever, you make your connection with, you know, those things. You relive those emotions or whatever it is, how she sees it. Your depression can go away from that. Not, she doesn't say that it's through medication, although I will always say this, don't throw away the medication. Even though I believe that depression is at its heart psychological / spiritual, and I don't understand how the brain chemicals and everything work, but we know that they do. While you're working on this, if you need to take medication to get your life in order, then I would say absolutely do that, because that just might be a godsend for you. Okay? I said that enough. I feel like I need to say it, though, because my thought is that it's the depression is not a chemical thing. I keep saying that. Okay, and let me say something about that. I don't believe that chemicals are not involved. Okay, I absolutely understand that if a person is depressed, their chemistry is going to be different than a person who is not depressed. And the brain activity of a person who is depressed is going to be different than the brain activity of a person who is not depressed. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying correlation does not equal causation. Everybody should know that, any good scientist and any person with common sense. So that means that the brain chemistry didn't necessarily cause the depression. It could just be correlating to it. It could just be accompanying it. It could be a sign of it. Could be part of it, could be the physiological aspect of it. Okay, so we'll read a little more. Okay, we cannot simply by an act of will free ourselves from repeating the patterns of our parents' behavior, which we had to learn very early in life. We become free of them only when we can fully feel and acknowledge the suffering they inflicted on us. We can then become fully aware of these patterns and condemn them unequivocally. Very condemning. Being separated from his true self, to which doctors refer offhandedly as depression. But they don't think of it that way. Repressed emotion can be resolved as soon as it is felt, understood, and recognized as legitimate. So that's her way to the cure. Wow, I got all through my little marks. All right, guys. Well, I think this has been a good little session on Alice Miller and the thought that depression is really a repression of one's emotions and kind of a separation from them. More thinking needs to be done. We will do it, though. All right, thanks for hanging with me. And this is episode number 8. I still haven't put it up online, but will soon. Let's go out with a little music. This is the Should Be Known podcast. And I'm Clayton Pixton. Take care, you guys.